Good morning. I call to order this meeting of the House Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee. I'm Representative Dave Pinto, the chair of the committee. Welcome to members of the public joining us. This meeting is being held pursuant to House Rule 10.01, which allows for virtual hearings of this type. And our meeting materials are posted on our committee website. And so if you're watching as a member of the public, you want to go there, you'll see an agenda and materials both for this meeting and for others as well. Yes, I think at this point, I'm going to have the committee legislative assistant call the roll.
Good morning, everyone. Representative Pinto, chair.
Present.
Representative Pryor, vice chair.
Present.
Lead Franzen.
Present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Davney.
Present.
Representative Damath.
Present.
Representative Juergens.
Present.
Representative Cotiza Watoon.
Present.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison present.
Representative Wozlawick.
Present.
And Representative Vogelmont.
Vogelmont present.
We have a quorum.
We have a full house. And thanks, members. And we have some terrific guests today. A special thank you to everyone for the hearings that we had last week. And I just want to highlight the hearing on Tuesday with the Jobs and Economic Development Committee on how critical childcare and early learning are as a foundation for our state's economy. And then hearing from the Prenatal 3 Policy Impact Center, the National Center on Thursday, and then the joint hearing on Friday with the Housing and Preventing Homelessness Committee on the impact of housing instability on child development. And I highlight that now just to say to members of the public that if you missed any of those, I'd really urge you to go back and check them out. And members, thanks so much for your attentiveness and engagement in those hearings. We will not have a hearing on Thursday since we had three last week. So just to highlight for that. And so now today we're moving into hearing from the administration, hearing from Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan's terrific team on the administration's plans and recommendations regarding budgeting to support young kids. And there's some really exciting things to share in that area. I'm delighted that we're joined by Commissioners Harpstead Mueller and Assistant Commissioner Bailey, the Director of the Children's Cabinet, to discuss that. I just want to make sure to set up for everyone the overall plan here is that today we're going to be hearing the big picture regarding those plans across a variety of agencies. And then next Tuesday, the plan is to dive into the proposals from MDE and that side of our world. And so members will have a particular opportunity in a week to dig in much more detail on those proposals, and then in future weeks to the other proposals as well. So there will be time for questions today, but so you know that somewhat higher level, and then we will definitely get the chance to kind of dig on through a lot of the details. So I think we're all set. I'm just going to look and see if I have any questions from members. And so with that, I'm just delighted, as I said, to be joined by three terrific leaders in the administration. I'm not sure who's going to be going first. I have Assistant Commissioner Bailey on my list first. I don't know if she will be the first person talking with us. Let her unmute if so. But otherwise, if it's one of the commissioners.
Good morning, Chair. So yes, I'm first.
Dive on in. I'm so glad to have you here. Welcome, and please identify yourself for the record and then proceed.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Erin Bailey, and I'm Assistant Commissioner and Executive Director of the Minnesota Children's Cabinet, and I am delighted to be here with all of you. The Children's Cabinet is housed within MMB and is an interagency partnership the governor has charged with leveraging cross-agency coordination and leadership to help make Minnesota the best place for each and every child to grow up. I will say we are grateful for Chair Pinto serving on our advisory councils and for many of you being involved in helping to inform our work. As a leader of state government cross-agency work, I am, as I said, extremely excited to be here with my esteemed colleagues and to present three of our agency's leaders who have been made proposed historic investments in young children and their families included in the governor's supplemental budget. Thank you for the opportunity to provide overview of comments on the work and efforts that we have had underway to present a child-centered budget. After I provide brief overview remarks, I'll turn it over to my fellow champions for children, Commissioners Mueller and Harpstead, who will provide introductory remarks before our three agency assistant commissioners at departments of Human Services, Education, and Health present the details of the governor's budget recommendations in core early childhood areas, including childcare at DHS, early learning and supports at MDE, and home visiting at MBH. As we start this discussion, I'd like to ground us in who are Minnesota's young children and their families. As I review some of the high-level data points about who these children are, I think it's extremely important that we acknowledge, as members know, and you've heard from many prior testimony, that the research is very clear about the impact of multi-generational approaches, that our best investments in young children are investments in their parents, and this snapshot includes some information that will help tell this story, and I think many of the investments you hear about today are pieces of also building on that research and foundation. The data presented here is from the Kids Count Data Center. It includes population level data being from the 2019 census data analysis and the cost of care from the child care market survey that was done in March of 2021. This is the most diverse age group, with 34% of children under five being Black, Indigenous, or other populations of color. There are 345,991 total children under five in Minnesota. One in four of Minnesota children are children under the age of five. Nearly one in three young children, 0 to age 8, live in low-income households, defined as 200% of federal poverty guidelines. For everyone here, that's around $51,000 for a family of four with two children. And these are working families. Within lower income households, 98% of children have at least one adult who has worked in the past year. 76% of Minnesota children under the age of six have all available parents in the workforce. This is a top rate in the country. And while we know there are barriers families face to access and affordable childcare and early learning opportunities, as the cost data show demonstrates, we all understand the clear benefits when children have safe, stable, nurturing environments where they can learn, grow, and thrive. The Census Pulse survey data also tells us how the pandemic and the stress of being a parent has been felt across the state. According to the most recent survey, for more than half the days in the past 2 weeks in Minnesota, 19% of parents, nearly one in five, report feeling nervous, anxious, or on edge, and 26% feeling down, depressed, or hopeless. These data tell a story about access and affordability that, as this committee well knows, parents, business leaders, childcare providers share with us so frequently. The early years of critical growth and development are priorities for investment, and the return for all of us benefits to the current and future workforce and educational opportunities are too great to pass up. For this reason, I'm excited to be here with my colleagues to share the historic investments in young children and families and for all of us in the governor's supplemental budget. The total children and family governor's package included $5.1 billion over fiscal years 2022 through 2025, with $2.6 billion of that going towards cross-agency investments in early childhood. Most of these investments will be presented to you this morning. It includes $1.8 billion to make affordable childcare and early learning a reality for more Minnesota families by funding 50,000 more state childcare and early learning program slots for children. This would come from 32,000 additional children that would be served by the Child Care Assistance Program, 10,000 additional children that could be served through increased investment in Pathway 1 early learning scholarships, and more than 6,000 new children that could receive public pre-kindergarten programming through mixed delivery approach provided in school-based, licensed family, and center-based, and Head Start settings. These budget proposals are reflective of the governor and lieutenant governor's mission to make Minnesota the best state in the country to grow up, as well as reflective of the commissioner's leadership and the work to center children and families in their decision-making, and in the feedback that we continue to hear from communities and families. The proposals you will hear about today stem from years of stakeholder engagement, as well as hours of cross-agency conversation under these commissioners' leaderships, and with valuable discussions and feedback loops with committee members here today from both parties in many, many ways through much work. I'm grateful to turn it over to them now, starting first with Commissioner Mueller and then Commissioner Harfstead to add their introductory remarks. If there aren't any questions for me, Mr. Chair, I will turn it over to Commissioner Mueller.
Thank you so much. And members, I'm thinking we will hold for questions till we've heard from each of these leaders. But Commissioner Bailey, thank you so much for setting the stage for us there. And so we'll move to Commissioner Mueller, and please introduce yourself. And so glad to have you here with the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Pinto and members of the committee. My name is Heather Mueller, and I have the pleasure of serving as the Commissioner of Education. Thank you for having us join your committee today. My team and I are happy to be with you this morning to share pieces of the Governor and Lieutenant Governor's 2022 supplemental budget as it relates to early childhood. I'm particularly proud to be here with my colleagues from the Departments of Health and Human Services, Commissioner Harpstead, as well as the Children's Cabinet Assistant Commissioner Executive Director Erin Bailey. Each of our respective agencies and roles play an important part in the lives of young Minnesotans and their families. You've likely heard me say it before, but it's worth repeating that budgets reflect the values of the people who create them. And I believe that the budget you have given us the opportunity to share today reflects how much we believe in the mission of this committee's work and how much we believe in our youngest learners. No one knows more than the members of this committee that setting our students up for success starts early. You've heard a breadth of research and committee that shows how critically important the early years are to setting up a child for positive educational, social, emotional, and behavioral outcomes later. There is a common misperception about early childhood education that it is only about learning basic skills, and the research demonstrates that it's so much more than that. It's a time when children learn critical social and emotional skills, and they have a partnership that's formed between the child, their parents, and the teacher. And then when this is done successfully, it helps to lay the groundwork for them to continue that throughout their child's education. The investments in this budget recognize that the impact to access and early learning programs can often have the impact on trajectories for their student outcome for the rest of their academic career. It is past due that we invest in a robust statewide mixed delivery pre-K program, coupled with funding for our youngest children to also access high quality learning opportunities. And the research continues to be clear that it is incumbent on us to ensure that all children have access and can participate in early learning opportunities. You'll hear from Assistant Commissioner Bobby Burnham the details of the early learning components of the Governor and Lieutenant Governor's supplemental budget. It's a budget that invests over $750 million in early childhood education over the next 3 years. Minnesota's economy has given us a great opportunity, and quite frankly, an obligation to make a meaningful and impactful investment in our public education system, and that starts at birth. The investments that we'll walk through today are targeted at increasing access to high quality early learning opportunities for our youngest Minnesotans, supporting their mental health, and developing the early childhood education workforce that supports them. The investments put our money where our mouth is. They take action to create and strengthen programs and activities that we know work, while streamlining delivery and giving families choices and flexibility. A statewide mixed delivery pre-kindergarten program centered on best practices will provide access to over 23,000 four-year-olds. A robust investment in early learning scholarships will help over 10,000 children statewide access high-quality early learning opportunities. And the changes to our funding for tribal Head Start programs demonstrates our commitment to our youngest American Indian learners. None of this, however, is possible without the early childhood educators that lift up our children and support our families every single day. We must create pathways for early childhood educators and support them throughout their careers. When our families have the access and the resources that they need for their children thrive. I believe that that's our goal, and I believe that this budget gives us the opportunity to fundamentally shift the trajectories of Minnesota students for the better. Actually, it shifts the trajectory of Minnesota for the better. Early childhood care and education is more than preparation for primary school. It aims at the holistic development of a child's social, emotional, cognitive, and physical needs in order to build a solid and broad foundation for lifelong learning and well-being. And this has the possibility to nurture caring, capable, and responsible future citizens. And with that, I will appreciate having the opportunity to be at this committee this morning, and I will hand it over to our colleague, Commissioner Harpstead.
Commissioner Mueller, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and for your leadership. We really appreciate it. And yes, let's have Commissioner Harpstead join us now. And please identify yourself. And so glad to have you back with the committee.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Jody Harpstead, the Commissioner of the Department of Human Services. Chair Pinto and committee members, we are very proud at DHS of the Governor and Lieutenant Governor's budget proposal that includes over $5 billion in investments in children and families, which matches their commitment that Minnesota be the best place in the country for kids to grow up. One of our top priorities in DHS is supporting the caring professions, or as Chair Pinto would have it, the caring and teaching professions. Those frontline workers that we all applauded throughout COVID, who make up 15% of Minnesota's workforce but make 30% less than the average Minnesota wage. And we'll have a hard time keeping up in a workforce shortage with all of the wage, benefit, and bonus competition that's going on in today's world. And we are doubly interested in supporting the childcare workforce, the workforce behind the workforce that keeps Minnesota's economy going. And so our Assistant Commissioner Tiki Brown is so pleased to be here today to share with you the portions of the Governor and Lieutenant Governor's budget proposals for early childhood learning and development in the Department of Human Services. Thank you very much.
Commissioner, thank you for your leadership as well. And I'll just note, I've had the chance to work with each of these three individuals, and it's been such an honor to do so. And I thank you and for putting kids and families at the center, as that graphic that this Commissioner Bailey put up. Members, I suspect that we're not going to have these leaders able to stick with us for the full hour and a half of our hearing. And so, and please, you all can correct me if that's wrong, but I know you have a ton going on. And so just, if members, if you have questions kind of at this high level, area, please raise hands and do that now. And then otherwise, what we'll do is we'll start diving into sort of the next level down and hearing from some of the assistant commissioners that was referenced. So I'm just waiting to see if we have any hands up. And I am not seeing any. And so in that case, I believe that Assistant Commissioner Brown, as referenced by Commissioner Harpstead, is our next person who is up. And so we'll see if that's correct. And have Assistant Commissioner Brown please identify yourself, if that's right. And we'll dive into the first portion of this.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Chair Pinto, members of the committee, my name is Tiki Brown. I am Assistant Commissioner for Children and Family Services at the Minnesota Department of Human Services. And I'll be presenting on the governor's budget recommendations related to childcare. Okay, so the governor recommends increasing the Child Care Assistance Program, or CCAP, rates to the 75th percentile of the market rate survey. This is a federally recommended benchmark to ensure equal access to childcare for low-income families. The next update would occur January 1st of 2025 and then be updated automatically with each market rate survey every 3 years. CCAP serves approximately 15,000 families and 30,000 children each month. And increasing the rates improves access to affordable childcare for low-income families. It reduces out-of-pocket expenses and it supports childcare providers with higher reimbursements. Next, the governor's budget includes a recommendation to turn the Child Care Assistance Basic Sliding Fee Program into a forecasted program. This would allow families who meet the income and eligibility criteria to access the program starting in fiscal year 2024. Forecasting the Basic Sliding Fee Child Care Assistance Program would ensure that families do not have to wait until funds are available to access the program, meaning that the county waiting list for the program would be eliminated. When fully implemented, it is estimated that an additional 16,000 families would be served by this program. The governor's budget also includes a proposal to alter the definition of family under the Child Care Assistance Program, or CCAP, to include foster care families, custodians, and guardians. This proposal would allow these families and individuals to access the Child Care Assistance Basic Sliding Fee Program to receive increased financial support for child care. It is anticipated that an additional 2,000 families would be eligible for basic sliding fee child care as a result of this change. The governor's budget includes an additional $31 million in fiscal year 23 and $71 million in fiscal year 24 and 25 for grants to support child care providers experiencing financial hardship due to the COVID-19 pandemic and for other child care provider supports. This proposal would extend the availability of additional financial support for child care providers after the federal funds made available through the American Rescue Plan, or ARP funds, have been exhausted. Specifically, this recommendation includes flexible funds for programs experiencing financial instability. Now, grants would not be subject to the same state and federal requirements that the ARPA-funded Child Care Stabilization Financial Hardship Grants currently do. And grant funds will be available until fully expended at the end of fiscal year 25 or whenever sooner. The recommendations will strengthen the childcare sector for Minnesota by extending a number of ARPA-funded programs that are currently set to expire. Supports for childcare programs will include extending the one-stop childcare assistance network through the end of the 24-25 biennium. If the committee recalls, this network was established during the 21 legislative session to support the startup of new childcare programs and to expand and sustain existing childcare programs. Additionally, this proposal extends the workforce development grants through the end of the 24-25 biennium. Again, this grant was established during the 21 legislative session to provide childcare training, job skills, and job placement for economically disadvantaged individuals and to increase the number of qualified early educators. This proposal also funds shared services alliances. This was established during the 21 legislative session as well to help family childcare providers achieve economies of scale and run more efficient programs, boosting provider wages, increasing enrollment, and leveraging shared support services to improve quality. And finally, in 23, 24, and 25, there are funds allocated for grants and other supports to childcare providers to improve their access to computers, the internet, and subscriptions to online childcare management applications that can help them improve their business practices. Mr. Chair, that brings me to the end of my presentation for the governor's recommendations for childcare. I'll stand for questions or pass it on to my MDE colleague.
Okay, well, let's see if there are any questions regarding the child care portion of this. And thank you so much, Assistant Commissioner Brown. And I am not seeing any hands raised. So then in that case, we will in fact move on to Assistant Commissioner Burnham to share on the MDE side. So please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Good morning, committee members. My name is Bobby Burnham, and I serve as the Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Teaching and Learning at Department of Education. And this morning, I'm going to share with you the investments that the Governor and Lieutenant Governor have proposed for the Department of Education Early Care and Education Programming. These investments are targeted at increasing access to educational opportunities for our youngest Minnesotans when it matters most, supporting their mental health and developing the early childhood education workforce. This first slide, the proposals will focus on the student and staff mental health. Infant and early childhood mental health consultation, pre-K is our first slide, I'm sorry, pre-K. Proposals focused on increasing access to early education opportunities. So our pre-K proposal is combining existing funding streams with a new $525 million investment over 3 years. This proposal will create full day publicly funded pre-kindergarten for over 23,000 eligible four-year-old children using a mixed delivery model comprised of school-based Head Start and center-based and family childcare programs. This structure will improve system access, efficiency, and better alignment of the state's early childhood care and education and early elementary systems. During a phase-in period, allowing for a transition to full implementation, current programs will be held harmless in their current allocations as they work to meet revised program requirements and establish mixed delivery partnerships. Offering public pre-K for eligible four-year-olds using a mixed delivery model assures families of program choice and ease of navigation as schools and communities create early care and education systems using a single set of high-quality pre-kindergarten standards known to close opportunity gaps and support student and family success. The next proposal, Early Learning Scholarship. This proposal will invest $75 million per year in what we now know as Pathway 1 Early Learning Scholarship. This model is increasing access to over 10,000 children statewide. This change will expand the eligibility for Pathway 1 to all income eligible 0 to 2 year olds, recognizing the need to offer support earlier, especially with the youngest infants and toddlers, while supporting families' choice in what program they choose to attend. And you can see in the chart the dollar amounts being proposed for each of these two programs.
Can I actually, Assistant for Burnham, if you go back a slide. Yeah, can you just, I know and just want to make sure folks see VPK in that slide, voluntary pre-kindergarten and SRP, School Readiness Plus, which is another name for that program. I think members are familiar with that. My mind is blanking a tiny bit on PWII, and maybe I'm probably missing something super obvious, but can you just remind me of what that's referring to?
Sure, Chair Pinto. So voluntary pre-K is the current voluntary pre-K programming being implemented along with School Readiness Plus, and the PW2 is the Pathway 2 scholarship program.
Thank you. Okay.
Sure.
My head was trying to come up with an acronym that had four words, the third and fourth with starting with letter I, but okay, Pathway 2, got it. And then the other thing is, could you just expand a tiny bit on the reference to mixed delivery in the public pre-K? In the past, of course, there have been some pre-K programs that have been school-based only. And if you could just say what the administration has in mind regarding that.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair Pinto. So we know that the Build Back Better plan has a robust mixed delivery model being proposed. So what we tried to do with this proposal is mirror that as much as possible. We know that families still need a choice in early care and education opportunities for their four-year-olds. So we have are requiring a 30% for Head Starts, 30% for childcare and licensed childcare, and then 40% allocation for the new seats to be split in the mixed delivery model. We know that there needs to be time to build out that mixed delivery model. So we have built in this transition year for those current voluntary pre-K programs, School Readiness Plus programs, and Pathway 2 programs to transition into the new public pre-K model. And we'll give the department time to provide support and to facilitate the partnerships between school districts and their community-based early care and education programs.
Okay, thank you. That's really helpful. And I guess I'll remind myself and members as well. We'll be diving more into details in the future, but it's helpful to get that overview. Anyway, yeah, please continue. And members, of course, please feel free to raise hands if you have questions as well. But please continue.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Two proposals regarding Head Start, the tribal Head Start set aside. This proposal will add language to designate 10.72% of the total Head Start annual allocation to tribal Head Start programs, where the funds will be divided among the federally designated tribal Head Start programs. Designating a percentage of the total Head Start allocation to tribal Head Start programs will provide a more stable funding from year to year, stabilizing their program operations for tribal Head Start programs. Currently, state Head Start funding is divided among all the Head Start programs as a group, and we have heard over the years that with the change in the yearly allocation due to the federal funding formula, it is very difficult for the tribal Head Start programs to do the planning and meet the community needs that they've expressed. So we are proposing to give them a set allocation each year. The other Head Start proposal is to allow them to expand use of Head Start funds. Currently, state statute requires Head Start programs to use state funds to support minimum funded enrollment. This proposal will allow programs to determine based on their community needs if they will need to use their state Head Start funds to help with program operations, infrastructure, and facility needs or serve additional children. Back to the mental health of our staff and children, our proposals that focus on student and staff mental health include infant and early childhood mental health consultation in schools. We are proposing 3.8 per year to create an early childhood mental health system of care targeted at meeting the needs of the state's children by integrating services with local schools and early childhood programs that serve young children and their families. This work already takes place in childcare programs with federal funding and has long demonstrated as
a high need for schools. These funds will be used to expand into 100 sites statewide and support reducing staff stress and turnover, decreasing mental health systems in young children, and reducing educational disparities and exclusionary discipline practices, and increasing the capacity of staff to serve high-risk children. This next proposal, mental health services and early childhood social workers. Currently, Head Start and Early Head Start program staff working with families are required by federal Head Start performance standards to implement a family partnership process to support family well-being. Family safety, health and economic stability, identify family strengths and needs related to the Head Start parent, family, and community engagement framework, and offer individualized family partnership services in collaboration with families. So modeling off this framework, we are proposing $2.5 million per year to provide funding for social workers in these Head Start, early Head Start programs, as well as other early childhood systems like early intervention, to strengthen programs and improve outcomes for participating children and families. And our proposals for supporting the teacher workforce, Grow Your Own Early Childhood Education Program is a program to help develop a teaching workforce that more closely reflects the state's increasingly diverse student population and ensure all students have equitable access to effective and diverse teachers by supporting districts and charter schools to literally grow their own. Funds are used for scholarships or stipends for adults to pursue a teaching license or for secondary students to explore teaching careers with a specific focus on Black, Indigenous, and people of color individuals participating in the program. Recognizing the success of this program, the legislature increased funding last year, and even still, there is more demand for funding than was available. So in addition to more funding to existing Grow Your Own programs, a separate program to address shortage areas, the governor's budget includes $3.8 million per year to create a new Grow Your Own program dedicated to early childhood and education professionals. We have a early childhood family education teacher licensing proposal. So ECFE proposal or ECFE programs serve families with children from prenatal to kindergarten and potentially up through third grade. Licensed parent and family educators that serve ECFE programs is a recognized teacher shortage area. In fact, in 2021, a state report identified that 92 school districts reported that they had zero licensed parent and family educators. The policy aims to address both the licensure shortage and the lack of diversity among professionals who work with families through the ECFE program. 177,000 in each of the next 2 years will go toward offering scholarships through the University of Minnesota's Parent and Family Education Program, which will produce 15 licensed parent and family educators. These funds will be used to help address the shortage by providing funds for student scholarships to the U of M Parent and Family Education Program, which provides an online licensure program. Since the teacher shortage mostly impacts rural school districts and teacher diversity, the scholarships will be used in rural areas and/or Black, Indigenous, people of color students. And with that, Chair Pinto, I believe is the end of the MDE proposals.
Let's if you can go back one slide, and members, see if you have any questions, please raise hands. I just want to ask about the Grow Your Own Early Childhood Education Program. I would assume that that's aimed, the product of that would be for an individual to get a teaching license for early childhood education. Is that right? I'm assuming that that is.
So it also would assist people who are interested in obtaining a CDA credential or a higher education credential through AA or BA degrees in early childhood.
Okay, thank you. And I should translate CDA, Child Development Associate. Yes, I see you nodding. Yeah. And then are there, that then makes me think that that would bring someone into this field, which we know has, you know, historically very, very low wages. And just wondering whether there are components in the administration's proposals to address those low wages at all, if you can think of anything. And I don't mean to put you on the spot, Commissioner Burnham, but I'm just was thinking about that point, that challenge of bringing people in. And of course, one of the challenges that is really hard to pay for groceries and rent on a lot of salaries for early childhood educators.
Yes, Chair Pinto, thank you. So in this particular program, grantees may provide stipends, scholarships, or support cohorts of students, as well as provide other innovative programming that would help people pursue a career in early education. Another component of our pre-K proposal includes a requirement around compensation. So it is proposing that any public pre-K program attempt to meet the compensation level of a K-12 licensed teacher. And we did put in some flexibility in that proposal for childcare and licensed childcare providers around that particular requirement. So happy to go into more detail on that when we go into a deeper dive on our proposals, sounds like next week.
I'll appreciate that. Maybe just one other question on this, which is, is the program only for placement in public programs, in public schools, or can could somebody be placed? It sounds like if you get a CDA, you could then work in a private child care provider. Is that correct? And if you could just clarify that.
I would need to get back with Chair Pinto. Thank you. I would need to get back with you on that. I am not certain on that particular question.
Okay. Well, this is maybe just a bit of a setup for more detailed conversations next week. So good to raise that. Just looking to see if there are other questions from members. I see Representative Morrison has her hand raised. Please, Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize if this is not the moment to ask this. There's so many exciting and great things in this proposal. I'm really happy to see some emphasis on early mental health in our youngest learners. There's really been this sort of evolution of recognizing that mental health is health. And early intervention, as we talk about in this committee all the time, is where it's at and will make a huge impact. I'm wondering if you could just talk a little bit more about what some of those investments might look like, some specifics. And if that's for later, certainly defer Ms. Burnham, but I'd love to hear more if you're able to share.
I think we can do that. So yeah, Commissioner, maybe you can go back to that slide, and then please, if you could just expand a little bit on Representative Morrison's question.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Thank you, Representative. So the Infant and Early Childhood Mental Health Consultation in Schools is a partnership with our colleagues at Department of Human Services and Catherine Wright and her team on expanding her consultation program that's currently being implemented in childcare into school systems. The Infant and Early Childhood Mental Health Consultation is a prevention-oriented, multi-level intervention in which mental health professionals with training in early childhood development are paired with caregivers of young children to build adults' capacities to support children's social-emotional development and address challenging behavior. So we're looking to expand that into the early elementary, pre-K, and kindergarten years as a school-based program. Happy to go into more detail next week as well.
Yeah, Representative Morrison, okay, looks like you're all set. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Ms. Burnham.
Thank you. So I'm looking to see if there's any other hands raised, and I am not seeing any. And so in that case, we are going to, I believe, move on to then our third presenter, who is Mary Manning, Assistant Commissioner at MDH. And so Commissioner Manning, so glad to have you with us. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Pinto and committee members. My name is Mary Manning. I oversee the Health Improvement Bureau at the Department of Health and am eager to present to you the home visiting activity proposed by the Governor Walz. Next slide. Home visiting is a voluntary service for pregnant women and child caregivers. It links pregnant women with quality prenatal care, and it supports parents early in their parenting role and ensures that very young children develop in safe and healthy environments. It helps foster parenting skills that decrease the risk of abuse and really supports that role of parent as the child's first teacher. How does it work? There's usually shorter term programs and longer term programs. In our longer term programs, visits are closer together and more frequent during critical prenatal periods and during the first few weeks of a child's life. Gradually, those decrease as mom and dad skills get better and they get connected to either other resources and the child grows and develops. Programs typically end when a child is 2 to 3 years old. They go on longer if there's a child has a special needs or any concerns due to a major health concern up to age 8. Short term, families receive 1 to 3 visits shortly after birth to provide education and connections to other programs and make sure that the child's health is in general good standing, and the family and baby are doing well. Next slide. In a typical visit, developmental stages are covered with parents. Parents really benefit from a caring individual asking about how progress is going and what changes are going on with their new baby and child in a setting that isn't rushed and is focused on helping the family. I can't say enough about the connection that's made between the family and the home visitor, even if there's multiple visitors that have to be brought in. The information about the child's development is then, you know, customized, and parents get a lot of confidence and know more about and how to deal with any concerns and sometimes just reassurance. A number of topics are covered, and that trust that's built really helps to deal with and honestly deal with things like postpartum depression, if there's issues with family violence, and if referrals need to be made, maternal depression. Mom and dad's work on goal and skill building, problem solving, how to navigate other support systems in their community, and how to practice parent and parenting skills and communications. The governor's proposal really seeks to address the current gaps in our current family home visiting system. First of all, it would create and fund all births having a universal short-term home visiting visit. And that would be 1 to 3 visits with the goal to offer services to all 69,000 births that occur in Minnesota over a year. And then to create and fund evidence-based informed home visiting to serve priority populations and to expand long-term evidence-based home visiting across Minnesota. The priority populations are those families where children are experiencing, you know, special health needs, parents and families where someone has been incarcerated or the family has experienced homelessness, or some of the challenges that might occur for immigrant or refugee families or families that have been involved with the foster care system. Expanding evidence-based home visiting is really critical. In our current current state, we are only serving 5 to 10% of the need. And this would increase to 30% of the need in our state. The costs and the program would be scaled up over 3 years. In the first year, as you can see from the slide, we would be serving around 38,275 families, and you can see the cost there. And in the second year, we would be serving 66,670 families, and the third year, 103,414 families. Most of the money that would be used would go directly to community health boards, tribal nations, and nonprofits via grants for the delivery of home-based services. And these would be delivered by qualified visiting professionals. It is our desire, and we would anticipate continuing to develop a strong and representative mix of home visiting providers that represent the cultural and geographic mix of the communities across the state. Home visiting providers are a mixture of nurses, professionals with child development skills, pregnancy expertise, and all a number of other paraprofessionals. The operating cost at the Department of Health is approximately 9.1%. There are countless benefits and well documented in the research benefits for children. There's a reduction in for women who are pregnant and get home visiting services. There's a reduction in preterm births, low birth weight, and a decrease in child deaths of babies. There's a reduction in ER visits, and there's been documented decrease in the nights of spent in a hospital in baby's first year. There's decreases in maltreatment investigations through age 9, and there's documented increases and improvements in child learning and development indicators, parent and child attachment, child vocabulary and cognitive functions, and positive parenting evaluations. There's also a number of well-documented outcomes for parents and families. Positive impact on parent and family well-being, lower rates of pregnancy-induced hypertension, reductions in substance abuse and alcohol use. Moms and dads are more likely to spend time on their education and completing high school or at least 1 year of college, and higher rates of healthcare coverage for both parent and child. It's estimated that $6.50 is gained for every dollar invested, and there is a nice savings on future public services. That completes my prepared presentation, and I would take any questions you have, Chair and Committee.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks for the presentation and for the work. I know to your final bullet there, I know home visiting is just about one of the biggest, most action-packed, best return on investment we can have in our public investments. So thank you so much. Yeah, really good. I'm just looking to see if we have questions. Hands raised from anyone, and I believe Representative Wasilewicz, yeah, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, I had to move rooms because my dishwasher is very loud. Just wanted to point out, I had the opportunity to actually go along on a home visit several years ago, and I just want to sort of push that out as a thing that if members can do, you know, once we're a little bit further away from this COVID numbers coming down and that sort of thing, if folks are able to go on with a nurse on a home visit, I found it to be really really informative and really impactful and really sort of underscoring the need and the impact of this program, and just sort of seeing you know, while I was at the home visit, being able to see not only the parenting skills piece of sort of like the skills that parents need to be able to be good parents, but also the mental health aspect. So just how the nurse that I'd gone on the home visit with was able to sort of soothe some anxiety that the parent was experiencing around the health of their little one. And so I just want to say I really appreciate this program. I think it, as we've seen, it has really good outcomes and really big impacts, but it's also I think in in reality, I think we can see these statements and these numbers and that sort of thing. But I think when you really see the impact that it can have, when you go to a visit and you see the impact it can have on kids and families, I think it's a really impactful sort of thing. So I encourage members to do that if they're able to do that. I think it's really important that we sort of see what our investments are doing and the impact they can have. So I just wanted to make that note. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Wozniak. And Commissioner, if members were interested in doing that, what's the best way to make that happen?
I think probably you could contact us, and we could probably get you in contact with where there's home visiting in your local jurisdiction, and there's a lot of privacy concerns and the like, and whether or not the organization that's providing that, what their rules are and the like, and probably the ability to figure out how we could help arrange to line you up with the right group.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And members, actually, just as the commissioner was answering, I received a message from the Coalition for Targeted Home Visiting, which made the same offer. And so if members are interested, please reach out. Members, any questions for any of these presenters about this really exciting package of proposals that, as Commissioner Bailey had shown in her slide, really does put children and families at the center and just exciting in a wide variety of ways. So looking to see if there are questions at all. And I am not seeing that there are. And again, we're going to have some more opportunities to dig into the details of this. And so I'm so grateful to each of these leaders for coming in and sharing with us. I'm not sure if Commissioner Bailey, I think you may still be on. I don't know if there's anything that you would have in summary as somebody who's in the. And no, I don't want to put you on the spot, so no problem if not. But I think otherwise, I think that we're done with this. Looking to see, so no problem. But I really appreciate folks from the administration coming and for their work and pulling us together over the past months. This is a really exciting package, and we'll continue to dig in. So with that, we're done with that portion of things. And just we have a little bit of business members to accomplish. And so again, to our guests, thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it. And so members, we just need to approve minutes from a couple of past meetings. And so I'm going to ask Representative Pryor, if she is on, to if she could move approval of the minutes of our meeting from February 8th.
Yes, so moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And so members, any additions or corrections to those minutes? That's when we were at the University of Minnesota with the Jobs and Economic Development Committee. And I'm not seeing any. And so members, a reminder to unmute, and all in favor of approval of the February 8th minutes, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? So not hearing any, so that motion passes and our February 8th minutes are approved. And then our minutes of our meeting on February 10th, in our regular slot on Thursday. Representative Pryor, if you could move approval of those minutes.
So moved.
Thank you. And so any additions or corrections, members? This is when we heard from the Prenatal 3 Policy Impact Center. And not seeing any, so all in favor of approval of the February 10th minutes, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, so those minutes pass, that motion passes, those minutes are approved. So we have minutes approved for both of those. And so members, that I believe concludes our business for the day. I'm just looking to see if you have any questions or comments. Members, please raise hands. And then otherwise, we will not be on for this Thursday, as I said. And so the plan is to be back together next Tuesday in our usual meeting slot. Expectation right now is we'll dig into the MD proposals. If there are changes to that, we'll obviously report those. So, but with that, you get a little bit more time in your morning after a very busy week last week. Thank you so much to members and again to our guests, and our meeting is adjourned.